Support for this show comes from Art Beats and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Colt Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art Beats and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual past while also revealing their distinct roles within Art Beats and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art Beats and Lyrics now on Hulu. Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
In 2022, Team Milk came together by sponsoring female marathon runners for the marathon in New York City. Today, they're more than 20,000 strong. In 2024, Team Milk is making an even bigger commitment to female runners and launching the only women's marathon in the U.S., designed for and by women. The inaugural Every Woman's Marathon will take place in Savannah, Georgia on November 16, 2024. You can learn more and register for the marathon at everywomansmarathon.com.
Hello, and welcome to Good One, a podcast about jokes. I'm your host, Jesse David Fox. Each episode, a guest comes on to play a clip of one of their jokes and then discusses how they wrote it and how it fits into what they're trying to do with their comedy. I wanted to do a fun episode this week for obvious reasons, and that's what we have. As our guest is Lauren Lapkus, star of the recent hit Netflix comedy The Wrong Missy and a freaking comedy podcast icon. I've been listening to Comedy Bang Bang from the start when it used to be a Comedy Death Ray, and I was always on the alert when the host, Scott Aukerman, brought a new improviser on to play a character. And when Lauren first appeared in 2012, 100 episodes into the show, I was intrigued. By her third appearance, when she played Scott's nephew, Todd, and her fourth, when she played CBB staple Tracy Reardon, I was like, she is part of the show. She is a person that when I open my podcast app on a Monday, I'm excited to see her name. She's then continued her great improv comedy work and her spinoff podcast with special guest Lauren Lapkus, in which each episode she would be the guest and a host would make up a character for her to play. And what is so exciting about Lauren is just how loose and how free-flowing her comedy it is. It's just sort of like you feel like you're getting such a pure insight into how her brain works. Like, there's just like no filter whatsoever. And in many ways, she helped define what a podcast character could be. So currently she's hosting podcasts as herself. There's Threedom, which she hosts alongside Scott Aukerman and Paul F. Tompkins. And it's so funny and giddy, and I love it. And then there's the newcomers, which she co-hosts with Nicole Byer. So both Nicole and Lauren had never seen Star Wars before and are surrounded by people who have seen it and never shut up about it. So they started a podcast where they would watch it for the first time and experience what it's like to experience that phenomenon that they had only sort of heard reference to. After Star Wars, they then went to the Lord of the Rings trilogy. And the podcast was a personal favorite of mine at the start of quarantine. The character we talk about this episode is Pamela from Big Bear, a character Lauren first performed on a With Special Guest episode with James Adomian. The character also became a beloved staple of the Comedy Bang Bang live shows. But the clip we'll start with is from Lauren's Netflix character special. For those who aren't familiar, The Characters was an experiment Netflix did in 2016 in which they gave 8 sketch comedians 30 minutes to do whatever they wanted. Lauren was unique, however, because she already had a large catalog of characters to choose from her years of doing podcasts. In this scene, Todd, based on Lauren's Comedy Bang Bang character, and his mom, Todd's mom, are leaving a Dick and Boners, a parody of Dave and Buster's, of course, after a date she had. In the parking lot, they're confronted by, you guessed it, Pamela from Big Bear. So, here is Lauren Lapkus.
God, I'm so worst. Todd, I swear to God, you are making my life so difficult right now. And I gotta go to work. And you're coming with me because I don't have time to drop you at home.
What? Weren't you just on a date?
Todd, enough.
I kissed a cop. Song goes funky chunks.
Todd. What the serious heck is going on back here?
Get out your car. You're under fucking arrest, bitch.
Oh my God, it's an undercover cop.
No, it's not. It's a freaking Kraken, Mom. Back over her.
No. I saw something about this on Dateline. I'm going to turn off the car and I'm going to get out. That's what Stone Phillips would do.
You're fucking my husband, bitch.
What?
Yeah, you are.
What?
Hell yeah, you are. Get out your motherfucking car. I'm about to get your dirty witch ass wet.
Oh my God.
Hey,
oh my God.
No.
Get out. Oh my God.
Get out.
Oh my God.
Oh my God is wrong. Come on. Get on your knees.
What?
I'm gonna curb stop you straight to hell.
Mommy. It's okay, Todd.
Oh no, your son can't save you now, Taz, Mom. I know you fucking my husband, but joke's on you, because now you got every fucking disease I got.
Who are you?
Oh, I'm your worst nightmare, bitch. I'm your fucking teeth falling out at school while you fucking naked and your titties showing.
I'm not fucking your husband, I swear. I don't even know who your husband is.
Does the name Chucky's dad ring a bell?
He's married?
Oh my God.
Oh my God, that's what I thought. Because I've been hiding behind this fucking car for 3 hours waiting for your ass to stop fucking him inside that fancy dick and bonus.
We were just playing games.
Oh, you like games? I got a game I like to play. It's called, how about I'm high as shit on crank and I'm gonna beat your ass in the dirt.
No, that's okay.
Well, I didn't say we could vote on it, did I? I didn't, because I'm in charge. And you know what? I had a beautiful marriage and you ruined it. I was an amazing wife!
Oh, God!
That's right. I'm Pamela from Big Bear, and you're Todd's mom from Big Bitch. Ooh,
ooh. Oh, Todd, you saved me!
I'm melted!
Quick, get in the car. Get in the car!
I'm melted, Todd. Chucky's dad, or I'll eat your ass! Ooh, jackpot. I don't even give a shit. Bitch is fucking my husband. Man, these trolls don't even know what's gonna happen next. I'm fucking do some shit they won't even expect. I'm gonna fuck the president! Someone threw this shit out? Fucking dumbass.
I am here with Lauren Lapkus. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
So before we get to Pamela from Big Bear's creation in 2015, I want to back up to October 2012 when you first appeared on Comedy Bang Bang's 180th episode alongside Gillian Jacobs and Paul Tompkins, who was playing Gary Marshall. You played Tracy, a college senior who just came back from studying abroad in Italy. Not the more famous Tracy that you'd go on to play a few episodes later.
A total mistake that I named them both Tracy. Yeah. I only realized it after, and I was like, oh, I just was Tracy. Oh, yeah. Okay.
One's with an I, one's with a Y. do you remember what you expected going into that first episode, and what did you find from doing it?
Yeah, when I went into doing the first episode, I truly had no idea what the show was, and I didn't know what was happening at all. And it was one of those things where you don't really want to say that you don't know what's going on. So I just, I had a little bit of information. I, at the time, didn't really even know much about podcasts besides like This American Life. So I didn't really know anything about the show. And I met Scott Aukerman doing ASCAT at UCB, which sounds truly like a fake language that I'm speaking right now because if you don't know what I'm talking about, that's the Upright Citizens Brigade improv theater in New York and LA. And we have like a weekly show called ASCAT where we have a guest do monologues and then we do improv based off the monologues that the person does. And Scott came and did monologues and I met him there and he asked me to do the podcast after. So I went into it like pretty much not knowing anything about it, and except I had to come up with a character and we would improvise in character. So that was all I knew going in. But I was, it was kind of intimidating to come into this like recording studio and seeing like, you know, Gillian Jacobs and Paul F. Tompkins and Scott in there. And like, we're suddenly just sitting down and talking in character for like 2 hours. It was a lot the first time.
Yeah. What, and how did you feel it went?
I had a lot of fun. It was so fun. I mean, I had been doing improv for a while at that point. So it was totally my comfort zone to improvise in character. But there are so few opportunities with live improv to improvise for a long period of time like that and like really get deep into what, you know, a character's like backstory is and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so it kind of kept me on my toes in that sense.
Do you have a sense of when you felt like you really locked into doing the show or really felt comfortable, like you really felt like you were part of it and it wasn't like this foreign thing that you're doing and you were nervous about, like you felt like, oh, I'm now one of these people?
Oh, it took a while, I think, for me to feel like it was a totally comfortable thing for me to be doing where I just wouldn't think about it too much. I probably had to do like 10 or 15 episodes before I was really like, I'm a part of this. And then I think once I got asked to join Scott and Paul on the tour, that's when it really like was like, okay, this is my thing.
Yeah, that's so funny. I thought you were going to say way earlier than that. Because it's like, because by episode three, you know, you're doing Scott's nephew Todd episode three, you're doing Tracy Reardon by
you might actually make me realize that maybe it didn't take me that long. I think in my memory, it did. But if I was Todd in episode three, then I feel like I was comfortable. Yeah,
like Tracy, like you already had Tracy Reardon was your fourth time, and then you already had Tracy come back like a few weeks later. And we'll,
yeah,
and then like,
you're right. Yeah, I don't know. I think in my mind, I'm picturing more like the sweat I felt like leading up to going to do it. But I think in the moment, it has always been fun and enjoyable for me. And like, it wasn't like stressful or anything. But I think there's this feeling with like, you know, I was newer at the time to like the scene and everything. And so being on the show with people who were more established or people that I really admired, that's part of what makes it feel more intense. Like, oh God, I'm sitting across from so-and-so. Like, this is like kind of crazy right now. But then the improv allows you to just kind of forget about that part of it.
Yeah, it's almost like you're not Lauren trying to impress them. You're now this character and it's the character's show.
It's truly my ideal form to not have to be myself talking to people.
Did your approach to doing characters on the show change and how you went into it, how much information you provided Scott?
Yeah, I think my approach changed in that I really have never provided him with any information, but I will give myself, depending on how I feel, I can give myself a little more. But I think I tend to not really give myself a ton to go off of because I really like to just see where it goes. And it allows for there to be like really fun surprises. Some people are really, really good at coming in with a specific character game. Like I would say Joe Wangert is somebody who, when he comes in, he has a mapped out thing that he wants to get out. And it's so funny and so good. And it's very fun to watch it come out. And watch it like evolve in the way that he's already planned for it to, even though he's an amazing improviser, but it's all part of that. Yeah. And I think for me, I feel more nervous if I have too much information already in my head. I feel more comfortable if I'm just coming in with like a voice or a specific, like one little annoying thing about the person.
Yeah.
But yeah.
That makes sense. To exemplify this approach, I'd love to roll through some of your iconic CBB characters before we get to Pamela, just to tell me what, if anything, you went in with and sort of what did you quickly find was like the primary game or the primary thing that you found was the dynamic that you'd want to explore sort of and continue exploring in sort of different ways. So going in order, Scott's nephew, Todd, what did you go in with and what did you sort of find was the actual thing?
I went in with, when I was a kid, my childhood friend had a little brother who was always really annoying and their mom would scream his name And I hate to get him to stop or to get him to come somewhere. And I just was thinking about him. And so I wanted to be him. And I thought that by making it Scott's nephew, it would be really fun because I could make fun of Scott while doing it. So it gave me somewhere to go. So really coming in, I just wanted to be an annoying young boy who... And then I think it has gone so many crazy places with Comedy Bang Bang and with my own shows that I've done. Yeah. That character has just like become so much more developed than I ever imagined. But he and Scott have like a very, very rich backstory and home life and like habits they do together. Like just like the weirdest life has formed for that character. Yeah. And it's so fun just to think that it started from thinking about this kid I knew in second grade.
Tracy Reardon.
Yeah, that one was really, it's this simple. I really wanted to be somebody who was judgmental of others and said, "You're weird," but could not pronounce the letter R. And so just be "yo weird." And like, just being someone who was like always saying "you're weird," but she couldn't really say "weird." And that was the only thing I was going in with. And so that... the character has become like so not judgmental. She's really like open hearted and nice. Yeah. And, but I think by kind of just starting with just that simple thing, it allowed anything to happen. I mean, she quickly, you know, quickly came out that she had a shaved side of her head and was missing an ear and had piercings wherever her ear was and piercings all over her face. And she works at Claire's and she works at Baskin Robbins and she's like, she has catchphrases. And I mean, she truly, she was so much more than I ever could have thought. I really was just trying to come in. And I don't think I ever even got that out. I don't think it ever really worked in the way that I was thinking of it originally. So that was kind of fun.
Ho-Ho?
Ho-Ho was kind of a last minute idea that I had. And I guess it must have been Christmas time.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to be a naughty elf. So the only backstory I had was that I brought knives and weapons to the bad kids. And I felt bad that they got coal. And that character, and I came up with the voice, and it's like very Bart Simpson-esque. It kind of has that vibe. And it can be really hard to maintain because my throat like starts to hurt really fast doing that character. But yeah, I think it was that simple. But he's the size of a dollar bill. He is an asshole. He's like one of the most evil. And I really love playing that character because it's truly like my id. Like I can just say and do anything and it's fine. And yeah. I love that.
One last one. Big Sue.
Big Sue was inspired by a reality show person who died. it's not funny that she died, but it's just awkward to bring up. Yeah. But her name was Big Ange, and she was on Mob Wives, I think, which I've never even seen, but I had seen like a clip online, and I just loved her voice, and she has like a really deep, raspy voice and big lips, and she was just a fascinating person. And I really just wanted to look like that. And so that one was so fun because I got to do it on the Comedy Bang Bang TV show where they have this amazing hair and makeup team and could make me look exactly like I wanted. And it was like, that was like one of the best days ever. I would love to just walk around in that costume, like full makeup. I mean, it's basically drag makeup. Her eyes are so done and the lips are so big and it's just beautiful, and I just loved being that character. I thought it was so much fun to have the full look.
Well, since you mentioned it, I've talked to people who've done characters before about the influence of drag on their character performance. Do you feel like there's any of that in your character work?
I had never really thought about that until that character, because people were comparing me to Alaska Thunderfuck, who was on RuPaul's Drag Race and is truly stunning. And I had no idea about her. So I actually didn't even control the makeup, really. It was done by the guy at Comedy Bang Bang at the time. So like, I told him that I wanted really big pronounced lips that were turned downward and just huge eye makeup and huge hair, big bangs. And he really executed it. And yeah, I got a lot of comparisons to her, and I was surprised because I was like, I'm not trying to, you know, copy somebody. I just
Yeah.
But you know, maybe we could do something together someday.
Oh, you should.
But I do think that world has like such amazing makeup and stuff that I'm so inspired by. And I never really connected it until that point because I was like, I don't often get to do the full look. Mm. And then on Twitter, people were making that comparison. But yeah.
Yeah. So in 2014, you start your podcast with special guests. Can you explain the premise and why it felt like the right podcast for you at the time?
Yeah, so the premise of the show is that I'm the guest and the guest is the host. So basically, the host comes in with an idea of what they want the show to be called, what they want the show to be about, and the characters they want both of us to play. It's all improvised. And they determine my character's name and like any back info, backstory info they want to give me is great, but sometimes people don't really give me anything. Just a name. Mm-hmm. And we just improvise from there. So like, I don't know anything before we start and they just introduce the show as if it's their own show. And it's like a podcast they do all the time. And they bring me on like I'm just another guest and we just get into it. And it was my first podcast that I ever had by myself. And at the mm-hmm. time I had really been in the podcast game only as characters. And so the idea of doing a show where I hosted and was myself was really not in my wheelhouse at the moment. Like I felt really like I wouldn't even know what it would be about. I feel like I hadn't found my voice completely as myself at that point. I didn't really know what that would be. So in my mind, it just made sense to do an improv podcast, but I also wanted it to be something where I didn't really have to do a lot of work in advance. And this was the perfect way because then the guest does the work. But what you don't see if ideally is that, you know, I'm doing a lot of work on the show to make it what it is. And I think it's like it was a great way for me to like flex my improv muscles and just get better over the years and find that you can just keep anything going for an hour, no matter what the topic is.
So Pamela from Big Bear makes her debut on February 13th, 2015. James Adomian was doing his impression of Tom Likas, who is a misogynist Southern California shock jock.
I'm not a cow, motherfucker.
Oh, you're not a cow.
No, dude.
Is that more like it?
I'm an elephant, you bitch. I got sound effects, too. Listen to this.
You think you have a talent as a radio voice?
Yeah, dude, I should be on my own radio show.
I don't care.
Well, you better start caring.
Oh, I can do it too. Whatever you can do, I can do better.
Nah, dude, no, women are better than men.
I can do this.
I can do that too. Pew, pew, pew.
I can do this. All night long.
Watch this.
Oh, that's talent.
So, you know, James has been doing that character for a while. He's done a Comedy Bang Bang. So was that a time where truly was anything planned? What did you know? What did he tell you? What was sort of before even the microphones were on? What did you know going into that?
I didn't know anything. And I didn't even know who Tom Likas was. So that was really fun. And James is somebody who I just totally trust in an improv scene or an improv podcast because he will just go and like you really don't have to worry about anything. Mm-hmm. And for him, as when he came on my podcast, it was so fun and surprising because he truly talked by himself for like 20 minutes, I think, maybe more before he brought me in. And I was just delighted watching it. I mean, I thought it was just so funny and so fun. But by the time he brought me in, he had me call into the show as like a caller. And I just came up with the name Pamela from Big Bear in the moment. I didn't, first of all, I've never been to Big Bear. I don't know what that is. The voice was coming from an episode of Improv for Humans that I had done, I don't know how long before that, but in that episode, we watched a video of a woman at a monster truck rally, and she was really, really drunk, and her voice was a lot like that. And in the Improv for Humans, I did that voice kind of, and then so it was kind of in my head, like it was just a fun voice to do. So then when the time came with James, I decided to just in that moment just do that and kind of thought I would only talk to him in that character for like a few minutes. Like maybe I would call in as a lot of different people or something. I can't remember where it ended up going, but I think it was just
Yeah, just you two. Yeah, yeah.
And truly, I made her like a meth head from Big Bear. And I didn't, I think that might even be a like a sort of stereotype, which I went to Big Bear like a year ago, and I for the first time, and I had no idea what to expect, and it was really quaint, and there were so many cute little places, and I was like, oh, this character like doesn't make any sense here. and then I didn't even know what I was talking about, and then like all these Trump like trucks drove through, and I was like, I don't, maybe this character I don't know what this town is, like I can't put my finger on it. There's like really cute touristy stuff, there's like really big Trump supporters, there's like cabins, like I think she could live here, I don't know.
Yeah. That's fascinating. So talking about improv, I've talked to a variety of people improv in sort of different ways, and I'm very curious about sort of the mental state of people while they're improvising, because it seems like they're, it's not like it's either or, there's certain like a fusion of both, which is like there are people who are sort of extremely present. It's like, I don't know, like the Matrix and everything is sort of slowing down, and you're like observing, you're able to like observe everything that's happening, and it's like it's hyper presence. Or there's sort of like the opposite, which is like a completely free consciousness, and there's like no filter, and like things are happening, but you're not there, but you're there. Can you describe what it feels like in your brain to be improvising?
It feels more like the second option.
especially
doing live shows, like when we go on tour with Comedy Bang Bang, I feel like I don't even know what is happening or what's going to come out my mouth like the second I start talking, because there's this adrenaline from the crowd too that I think is really, it just takes over in this way. And even the lack of adrenaline, like sometimes I think the moments when you can feel the audience is not on board or that you have to win them over, I find that I'm more in my head and it's less fun. And I feel like if I can just come in with that strong energy of not caring, then I tend to do much better. But if my family's in the audience or something, I tend to be thinking way more and it's not as fun. But I think my brain does go into a sort of different section that like lights up and is just doing its own thing and is like really excited. And I find that like I'm saying stuff that I think is funny that I would never think I would say, you know? So like I've had moments on stage where I was like, oh, I can't believe like something good came out of the beginning of that sentence. Like I didn't know where that was going. And like, I don't know. So it's truly, I find it hard to explain because it is just kind of a sort of, especially when I'm playing a character like Ho-Ho or like Pamela, like these are just nasty characters that say and do the most vile things. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's just coming from like my unconscious brain or something.
I was going to ask you that. I was like, I assume there's no way she remembers this moment because it's one many years ago, but also sort of you're in this state. So I want to tell you partly what happens in the episode. So about 25 minutes in is when you say like, oh, you mentioned you've been doing meth for 5 years. You also say things like he asks you if you've gone to school and you say you've graduated both 8th and 9th grade. And then he tells you to ride the bus to meet him in Southern California, but you say you're not allowed on the bus because the last time you're on the bus, you rubbed the people's next to you's thighs as if you're jerking off their thighs.
Yeah, I don't remember.
What? But so it's like, obviously you had none of that.
I like hearing you say it though, like it's like an interrogation, like, and yes, then you said.
That's why it's just sort of like, there's no, especially the thighs part, you're like, there's no way someone's like, oh, I know a character trait from this person. But why? It's almost like now knowing that, like, does that make sense to you for like a thing Pamela would do?
Oh yeah, but it's so fun because like that was the first time I really got to be her, and I like that there was so much of that already there. But I think it's very funny to have to like talk about the the process behind saying something so stupid. But I it's weird to hear it back. I really would like to hear just you reading a transcript of that episode just completely seriously.
Just literally reading it, doing Tom's part and your part.
Yes.
Not smiling at all. So the funniest part, especially in retrospect, is at one point Tom goes, he likes the role play as Darth Vader. and you literally say that you've seen that movie. You go, I've seen that movie. Which is funny because as people who know you from your podcast, newcomers, you had not seen Star Wars. You go, I've seen that movie. He's so scary and he's the daddy is your response. So what is that moment like? Because I imagine that has happened to you in improv for at least a decade by that point, of someone bringing up Star Wars or thing like Star Wars and you having to, like, you know, your character hypothetically has seen Star Wars because most people have seen Star Wars. So what happens in general? Like, you might not remember that time, but anytime Star Wars was referenced prior to you seeing it, what do you do?
I think for the most part, I try to go along with it because I think there's something funny for the people who do know the movie about somebody just saying things that make no sense with it, but with confidence.
Yeah.
So that's been my kind of move with that stuff over the years. It's so weird now, having watched all of it, that I literally get references that I wish I didn't get. Like, I was just listening to Doughboys and they were joking about, like, one quarter portion. And then if you want to get one quarter portion, that's called a plot or whatever. And or a plot. And I was like, I get all of that and I'm sad. Like, I now know every part of that joke that was supposed to just be, like, breezed by. And I fully understand it, but my world has changed a bit with that stuff.
We'll be right back with more Lauren Lapkus.
Support for this show comes from Art, Beats, and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Cult Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art, Beats, and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual paths while also revealing their distinct roles within Art, Beats, and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu. Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
Calling all female runners, it's time to lace up and join Team Milk. Since the 2022 New York City Marathon, Team Milk has sponsored female marathon runners nationwide, providing support and shining a spotlight on their unique stories, perseverance, and drive to go the distance. Why milk? Dairy milk is an excellent nutritional ad for both marathon training and recovery. Milk contains 13 essential nutrients, including high-quality protein, making it a crucial component of a training diet. Plus, it's one of the best beverages for hydration, even better than water. The same electrolytes that are added to many of your favorite sports drinks are found naturally in milk. And in 2024, Team Milk is taking the next step to empower female runners by launching the only women's marathon in the U.S. designed for and by women. Built to be accessible, empowering, and community-building, the inaugural Every Woman's Marathon will take place in Savannah, Georgia, on November 16, 2024. You can learn more and register for the marathon at everywomansmarathon.com.
And we're back with Lauren Lapkus. So, correct me if I'm wrong, but with Pamela and, like, a lot of your characters, you don't necessarily, like, create a backstory. It's not sort of like bottom up. You sort of, like, are starting with a voice and maybe idea, and then you sort of, like, flesh it out as you're doing it. So it's like you, instead of creating a backstory, it's just as much as it seems like you just know who this person is after doing them for enough time. Is that correct? Is it just sort of like, what does it feel like to just sort of know the person without necessarily like knowing the facts at the time, but like if someone asked you, you can sort of like recall because you just sort of know them?
Yeah, I think they start to have a physical look in my head, and the voice, you know, once I'm doing the voice, I feel like the physical comes to me in my mind, like very abstractly, but like it's there. And so I feel like I kind of am this person. And so the voice is sort of a like kickoff point when if I do it in the future, it brings back a lot of the other stuff, like, oh yeah, okay, I look like this, I have this, like I'm this type of person, I would wear this type of thing. And it just is kind of stored in that way. I think it's really hard to like totally define it, but there's like this aura or something that I'm like pulling from, if that makes any sense at all.
Yeah, I think it does. That's how I imagined it within so many words. So I was wondering if you'd allow, if I could talk, if I can ask Pamela a few questions about things she's interested in.
Okay.
Hello, Pamela. Thank you for joining
me. Hey, Jesse. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm not good. It's
Why?
Not good right now. Because I'm sick of the masks.
Yeah, I was wondering what the pandemic has been like for you.
Well, I've been living my life. I'll say that. I've been out and about, but I can't go to the fucking grocery store because they want me to wear my damn mask. I got in a damn own fight with that security guard. I wrestled him. I tackled him. Let's just say he knows where to put the mask now, bitch.
So I wanted to ask you a couple questions about just some of your favorite things, the things you're interested in. Can you tell me what your favorite movie is?
Well, I got a couple, but they're mostly from the 80s, if you was alive in the 80s, I don't know, but a couple of them, like Back to the Future, Back to the Future 2, Back to the Future 3, because that one was a Western, very dusty. I like that.
What do you like about the Back to the Future trilogy?
I like that they just go back in time. You know, they go to the best periods of time. They can go anywhere in the whole world that they want. They can see anyone they want. They can kiss their mommy on the lips if they want.
Mm-hmm. And what's your favorite food, Pamela?
If I had to tell you my favorite food, I would start with corn on the cob, covered in sweltering butter, and mixed with a little bit of Parmesan cheese, ripped straight from a cow titty.
And you know, a lot of times I've heard you on podcasts, you've talked about things that you've hated. Are there things that you've hated recently that you want to get off your chest?
Yeah, I got a couple. Cottage cheese, Emily in Paris, and fucking my car broke down on the freeway.
In that order?
Mm-hmm.
What about Emily Paris that you hated so much?
Because that bitch been to Paris, you could tell.
All right, thank you so much, Pamela, for joining me. I really appreciate it. What are you going to do with the rest of your day?
Probably sit and spin, bitch.
Thank you very much. And scene.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, just then, like, obviously... What happens when I go, what's your favorite movie? And you're just like, and then it's like, of course it's this.
Well, like, in a sense, I was thinking, what would her favorite movie be? And I couldn't think of what she would watch. But then it seemed really fun to just think, say whatever the first movie I could think of was, because that just makes sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there's like, it doesn't need to really make sense. It just is true. Like, I don't know.
Well, it's like... What I think you see with a lot of your characters is there's the stuff that you know that makes sense and the stuff that you'll justify by the end of the sentence.
Yes. Exactly.
So in March 2016, Pamela from Big Bear makes her television debut as part of your character special, which, for those who don't know, was a Netflix gave 8 sketch comedians a half hour to do a sketch-based special. I've spoken to John Early and Tim Robinson about theirs. But by that point, you have tons of audio-only characters. Can you walk me through how you decided who to include, why you decided to include Pamela, and sort of what went into visualizing an audio character?
Yeah, so I definitely knew the second I had the opportunity to do that special, I wanted to use characters that I already knew and had worked on. And I was so grateful that I already had this podcast background because it was like a way for me to workshop characters. I think like... just in general, doing improv, at least for me, I don't tend to want to repeat characters in an improv show just on any given night of the week. It feels like cheating a little bit. Like, it's different than the Comedy Bang Bang or podcast universe where you're creating this world. But within, like, an improv team, you know, it's kind of annoying if someone always does that one thing or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it doesn't really work that way. So I would never have had the, like... developed characters that I had at that point without doing all the podcast stuff. So I was really glad about that. But when I was writing it, I really just wanted to show some range. So I was thinking about which characters are really different from each other and then which ones I just like the most and I have the most fun with and are like the easiest for me to work with in a sense. So that's how they all got in there. And Pamela is so extreme and so different from all the other characters that I really wanted to do her because I just thought it'd be so fun to get to bring that to life. And I got to, you know, paint my teeth brown and look like garbage. So it was fun.
The thing that I, yeah. the thing that was interesting rewatching the scene was like, she comes off as very scary. Like,
yeah, yeah.
How do you decide? Because though she's, and she's more playful on the podcast as those shows tend to be playful. You know, in the scene, she's mad that this woman is stealing her husband. Can you walk me through, like, how do you decide, like, okay, well, we have to, like, put this person in a situation. Why was sort of scary the direction you
went? I can't fully explain that, I guess. When I was writing it, it's hard to put her in a situation with the context I had already come up with where she comes off at, where you can play that she's like silly. I think in like talking to Scott or like, you know, that other sort of situation she's in, she seems pretty harmless. But seeing her in a dark parking lot is terrifying and I would never want to witness that. And so I was having fun with exploring that, but once we were doing it, it truly just felt so much scarier than I thought. Do you know what I mean? Like the character just comes off scary in that context. And I thought that was really fun, but it was like a kind of surprise in that sense. Like I think even just playing her in that moment, it has sort of like a sneaky, spooky sort of element. And then afterwards, like once the other characters are gone from the scene, I was just like rolling around on the ground and saying, I'm going to fuck the president, eating French fries. And she gets a little sillier at that point. And so maybe it's a matter of like who she's talking to, because she's way less scary when she's just alone.
Yeah. The end is so funny. You just roll over to French fries that are on the ground. And Todd knocks you on the ground, and then you say, I'm melting, and then they leave. Was it something you're like, we want a sillier beat to end this scene? Because otherwise it is just sort of like either menacing and or like sad that this sort of person.
Yes. So I remember I put in the French fries thing like later and like then fully log rolled like over to the French fries in a real parking lot, which was really painful and dirty. And then I ad-libbed, I'm going to fuck the president. And I guess in a sense, I'm glad I didn't name the president because I feel like as time goes on, that just becomes like funny in different ways.
Yeah. there's two jokes I want to ask you about. Who knows if you remember writing them? I just want to tell you I think they're funny. Which is Todd screams for his mom, and then you say your son can help you now, Todd's mom. And there's something about how you know Todd's name for no reason.
I really liked the idea of that woman only being being referred to as Todd's mom. Like, I think there's something really funny about like when people have kids and then they're only called like by the other kids or like, you know, other parents who don't know them yet, like, oh, that's Todd's mom and whatever. Like, there's just something funny about never getting to have a name. And so I really wanted her to be Todd's mom to everyone. And then it kind of made for like a funny connection later when Bobby Moynihan's character is just called Chucky's dad.
And then the other joke I really love is you go, I'm your worst nightmare, bitch. I'm your fucking teeth falling out at school when you're fucking naked and your titties are showing.
Oh, yes. I actually think I need to give Nick Weiger credit for that. He was helping me punch up my script. And he did come up with that line. That I'm your worst nightmare. I'm your teeth falling out of school. I might have added with your titties showing because I think that feels more like me. But
that does feel like a Lauren Lapkus original. I want to ask you one other thing about the characters, which is not Pamela related, which is you stripping to Brick is like, you know, it's iconic. It's like famous for anyone who knows the characters. Like that is like one of the moments. Can you talk about coming up
yeah.
with that?
Yeah. So that started as a bit that I did on stage at UCB. I was part of a show where I had to just do 5 minutes, a character bit. And I came up with that. I remember where I was, like in my little apartment, like I'm like, I got to do something tonight. Okay, I'm going to do a thing where I strip, but I just have like 1,000 layers of clothes on. And the song that I ended up picking at the time was Fast Car by Tracy Chapman. And I just wanted it to be really depressing. And I planned to hump an audience member during that. So in the live show, and then I ended up doing that for like years, actually. It kind of became like a thing that I was just doing all the time. And I would pick like a person in the front row of the audience and just dead-eyed hump them over and over again, which was, and return to them over and over again. And so when I got to do this special, I thought, oh, I want to put that in there. But Tracy Chapman did not approve of me using the song. I don't know what information she was given, but she did not approve. And but then I thought of Brick, and Ben Folds did approve, and he or his company or whatever, because later he like reached out to me that he had seen it and thought it was funny. And so I was really glad. I don't know like how it works with music rights and like how directly they're told about what is going to be done with the thing. So I don't know if he was totally shocked by that or if he knew that was coming, but I was so happy I got to use that song, because I think both of those songs are amazing, but Brick is more depressing in this very specific way for many reasons.
So this was not the end of Pamela. She keeps on living. She became a fixture of the Comedy Bang Bang tours that you did with Scott Aukerman and Paul F. Tompkins. So when Pamela started making the tour appearances, did you have anything thoughts of like how you wanted to approach her then, or things how you wanted her dynamic with Scott to be after you sort of knew who she was, but now she's going to be brought into this different world? Were there things you wanted to get out?
Well, I think I wanted to come out with a bang every time, and I think sometimes that would lead to just me saying something totally disgusting and Scott would just stare at me like, where are you going to go now? And so I think we that character kind of can be totally crazy to bring in that dynamic like on stage in that way, because I feel like I'm just like a rocket that I've set off like without meaning to or something, like coming out with like the biggest thing first, and then I'm like, oh God, now I have to like somehow keep it going. And at a certain point, we at least once or twice brought ourselves out with music for our characters that we chose. And I think I walked out to Ba with Da Ba, which was fun. So like coming in with an energy like that.
Can you tell me about her catchphrase?
I mean, all that comes to mind is suck my clit. Is that what you're referring to?
Because, yeah, that's
okay,
it.
Yeah, because, you know, as myself, I'm blushing a little bit here, but she would say that comfortably. But I think I did come out just screaming that within, like, the first second. Yeah.
The first time you introduce her, that's, like, within the first minute you say that. And he goes, that's my catchphrase.
All right. Well, you know, we don't get to hear that enough. We all hear suck my dick and it's all very comfortable, but everyone freaks out at suck my clit, and I don't know what that's about.
So in Pamela's last appearance, which was a live day in 2019, besides saying that for Christmas, her husband gave her a magic eight ball contact lens when she already had three, she freestyle raps. Gollum.
All right, let's see if my voice can take me there. Ready? Soups and stews, bitch, soups and stews. Put them in your butter, make a super news. You can't find what you do to do. You go outside and it's raining poo, because Gollum's in the cloud up above. He died. Much love.
Hold on, wait, what? Wait, what?
I killed him with a gun. I found it under a gun. I had two guns in my room. Couldn't find my other gun. It was under the gun. You always gotta look in the second location. It's the last place you look that you find your gun. It's under
under your other gun, son. I got a husband who loves me.
In general, it's sort of like, is a thing like freestyle rapping a thing you could only do in character? Does it feel like that it is something that typifies like why you do character work?
Yeah, I don't think I'd be interested in even trying to freestyle rap right now, genuinely, earnestly, as myself. Yeah. But I do think there is something funny to doing it in character, and that you can kind of get away with anything because the character, you know, is bad at it, or they're good at it in the way that they think they are. They're overly confident, but they suck. Like, I think it allows for this like comfort in that weird zone. And I think in Comedy Bang Bang too, like I end up getting pimped into doing things like that, which is like an improv phrase of like forcing someone to do, which actually we probably should retire because now that I'm describing what it is, I don't think it's good. But you kind of get like put into a corner where you're like, now you have to do this thing that you're not expecting. Like, hey, why don't you freestyle a rap about that? And like, it can feel crazy in the moment because you're like, oh no, now I have to do this.
So you first studied improv at IO, Improv Olympic in Chicago, a school, for those who don't know, founded by Sharna Halpern and Del Close, improv gurus and co-authors of the book Truth in Comedy. I always think, for a long time, people, when they think of the idea of truth in comedy, they think like autobiography or like people being really confessional. But for you, how is Pamela from Big Bear truthful and true to you?
I mean, in the way I interpret that is that you should bring a level of reality and honesty to everything in the scene. So that my character can be really absurd and really heightened and, you know, out of this world, but at the same time, she lives by a set of rules that are consistent and there's a truth to that. So, and also a lot of times I'll find like, I'll think my characters are so over the top and so crazy, and then I'll watch something and be like, that's truly this, like, there's so many reality show people or like just people you see on the street where they're not that far from what those characters are really. If you let them have a microphone, they might say a bunch of horrible stuff like that. So there's a truth to that. That, and I think a lot of times what that means also is keeping things grounded. And again, when I'm a dollar bill sized elf flying around, like that's not grounded, but there's a reality that you're all agreeing to that you're not breaking. And that's really what that means.
To what you're saying, I feel like a lot of people will think of creating characters as, you know, like how anyone like writes something where you're like, oh, I'm going to create a character. This is their name and this is where they live. But I feel like for you, it's the creation of the characters is done through like observing. Would you see that's correct? Which essentially like you're living a life where you're observing these traits, and then like when you're the character, these observations come out. Does that feel accurate? That ultimately like a lot of your character work is rooted in trying to observe who people are?
Definitely. I think that's like my favorite thing about life is watching people and taking them in. And I think there's a lot of people who don't like reality TV, and I love watching that. And it's kind of a great tool for people watching that I just really appreciate. Especially now, since I'm stuck inside all the time, I think I used to get way more inspired by people everywhere I went. I mean, I remember very specific people I've seen over the years just for no reason because they were kind of odd. Like I remember a woman in line at Marshall's who was holding like 100 bras and she was so mad. And I was just like, what is your life? Like, I'm so fascinated by it. You're so mad. You're buying 100 bras. Like, where are you going? What's going on? Like, I just want to know more. And so little things like that really do inspire me.
In that way, do you feel like you're, I guess I was wondering, in what ways do your characters feel personal to you? Do you feel like a person who knows you just from your character work is learning something about you or learning about how you see the world?
I think they're probably learning something about me, but I don't know what it is because I do think my real personality is very far from most of these characters. And most people I think would just describe me as like a nice lady. Like but I do think for like when I've worked with people, for example, like on like TV shows or whatever, where I don't really get, I think I'm better at this now as I get older, but at the time I would get more nervous or not be myself as much or, you know, whatever. And then they would see me do improv. It was like they were seeing a different part of me entirely. And there's this surprise that comes with that. Mm-hmm. And so anytime I've gotten to do that within like acting, like be able to bring those things together, it's really gratifying because I feel like, okay, the people I'm working with and the thing that I do are now coming together in this one way where they like get me. And it's like so much more comfortable.
Yeah, I think the way you describe yourself as a nice lady, I think they, if you only knew that, there is like, some of your characters are sort of like wonderfully gross or like childishly gross in a way that's sort of delightful. Do you, what attracts you to that? Or is that something you wish you could express in your real life, but sort of social norms does not allow one to?
I mean, I think there's just a part of me that has always just found that stuff funny, and it reminds me of being a kid, and I like to stay in touch with that part of myself, and I think people find it surprising coming out of me, so there's like that part of it that's really fun to play as well.
One thing I noticed was your first Comedy Bang Bang appearance came a few months after you auditioned for SNL, which was a childhood dream that you've talked about. I'm sure there are many other things going on, but I was wondering if part of your, in so much as you'd already been doing improv for maybe a decade before you did Comedy Bang Bang, but was there something about the freedom of not having to fit yourself in sort of this, that box of like what SNL is and this idea of like how a performer should be? Do you feel like there was certain freedoms that you felt? Like, do you feel like you're able to not care as much what people thought because for whatever reason, and that has allowed you to sort of continue to do that, and you play these characters who don't care what people think, and then you sort of keep on going down? Do you feel like it self-perpetuates in that way?
That's really interesting. I've never connected it in that way, but I do think that makes a lot of sense, that that was definitely my goal my entire life, and like the kind of one thing I could think could come of what I liked to do, you know, like how do you do this otherwise? And as I got older and got more experience in, like, moved to LA and started learning how things work in the entertainment industry, I started to understand like, oh, there's so many paths to this goal, like this thing that I want to do, not specifically SNL if it's not going to be that. I still really wanted it for a really long time, and I was really sad when I didn't get it, but I feel like I didn't do my best. And when I think back to that, I'm like, I don't even know what I did, because everything I've created, all my characters have come since then. And I'm so like, oh, that's so interesting that there was this period of time where like I had that opportunity, and it was really cool. And I was so happy just to even get to go do it. Truly, I felt like, oh my God, this is so amazing. And looking back though, I'm like, oh wow, that could have been totally different if things had, you know, developed in a different way where my characters were already established by this point. But I think you're right that like not getting that one thing does opens every other door, because you are able to go, oh well, okay, that's not going to be the thing. What else can I do? And I'm so open-minded about what that can be. I truly love doing everything. I mean, I have done a really wide range of things in my career that wouldn't have happened, presumably, if I got that job. And that's been so cool. And like, you know, everything from like Jurassic World to The Big Bang Theory, which are like two things where I'm like, I would never think that those things would happen. And like, that's so fun that I got to do those things. And so it's just like letting yourself go on the ride and not be stuck with one idea.
One thing I heard you say that I found interesting is how you felt doing podcasts made you feel comfortable calling yourself a comedian opposed to just an improviser or an actor, but a comedian. What does being a comedian mean to you?
Yeah, I think for me with doing improv, especially coming from Chicago and with that background, like improviser, it's such a word that we use in our community, and it's so meaningful, and I really appreciate it. And I never thought of myself as a comedian because it felt like, well, I'm an improviser. Like, it's this one term that is used, and all these people I admire and work with call themselves improvisers. We don't call ourselves comedians unless you also do stand-up or you do something else. And so there was always this feeling in my mind like, oh, I don't really associate with that word because what I do is this one specific thing. And as I've gotten to find my voice more through the years, and yes, I think podcasts were the way that all happened for me, I was able to go, oh, I'm a comedian because I create funny content and that is what I do. And I go do live shows where people laugh. That's comedy. Yeah. There's no other way to put it. And I think improviser is a more amorphous term that like people don't really know as much. Like the word comedian is just like, you know what that is. So if I tell you I'm a comedian and then they're like, tell me a joke. I'm like, well, that's not what I do. I'm not a stand up. I do this whole other thing. And then that can open that conversation. But I think the word, I really like owning that word because that is how I see myself. And it now, you know, when I am in things as an actor, it's helpful for me to go, I'm an actor and I'm a comedian because this isn't everything to me. This one job or this one thing, I like that I have another part of my life, and that calling it, you know, just comedy as a big term, it just feels better.
Yeah. Speaking of acting, so earlier this year, you co-starred in the film The Wrong Missy on Netflix with David Spade. And I heard you talk about that, let you improvise a lot. But watching it, I was struck by how unhinged your performance was. Like, I can't remember a performance in a mainstream comedy when a person was, like, so free to go for it. And, like, I imagine they, like, let you do stuff, but you'd have no idea what they would keep in. I feel like in any movie they shoot whatever, and then they, like, keep the more traditional acting thing.
Yeah.
But what did it mean for you to not only get to do that, to not only get to perform that way, but see how much of it was used?
It meant everything. And I mean, I think this is what I'm referring to specifically when I said, if I can act in something where I'm able to be free in that Pamela from Big Bear way, and also, you know, be myself when the cameras aren't rolling, I feel like everyone can see, like, oh, this is her whole essence. Like, she does all of these things. She's a nice, normal lady, and then she's this crazy person as well. So, like, that's great. And it makes me feel like I then suddenly know everyone. Like, I'm just much more at ease. And that experience was so fun for that reason. I mean, I was given the freedom to go crazy, and I really wanted to take it because it was my biggest role to date, and like to be able to play a character who can pretty much say and do anything, and it works for the character, and is like, it makes sense for the character. That was just that exact like freedom I needed, and it felt like doing an improv podcast or anything like that. It felt like the freedom of just going for it, so I could add in anything. And I mean, performing alongside David Spade, who is someone who I've truly loved forever. I've always been like, oh, he's on like Late Night Sam, I'm gonna watch it. Like, I truly have like followed him in a way that I don't always do with people I even like. So getting to work with him was so exciting. And like getting to try to make him laugh was really fun. So I think it was just one of those things where I didn't expect it to be anything like that when I auditioned for it.
When you start in a comedy, as we talked about, is very character focused, and you know, on podcasts you do characters, and that's what we talked about. But now you have multiple podcasts where you are yourself. Can you talk about coming to terms with being yourself in public as a comedian?
Yeah, I think this has been such a an evolution for me, like through doing characters for so long, it started to feel like in a sense, people were getting to know me, but I was finding my voice for myself too, without really realizing it. And when I had the opportunity to start doing shows as myself, it seemed really easy. I think like so much of it for me was growing up, but like just maturing as myself and knowing myself better. But also, yeah, like having the experience of like, okay, I've talked in characters enough. Now I kind of want to talk as myself. And that seems easier in a way, where it seemed easier before to not be myself. So,
yeah, it was, as a person who's following it, I do think it was something where it felt natural, because I think especially because Comedy Bang Bang is a type of improv where you like cheat a little, like you laugh as yourself.
Yeah.
And you let little bits of yourself out and the things that you know, and there's a little bit of like awareness that, you know, if you listen to all of it, you get a picture of who this person is in these peaks behind these sort of characters.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I mean, I think it, and as I've performed and gotten to know and get more comfortable with all these people that I was doing those shows with, it just seemed like, oh, like I know what my perspective is. And I think even just through my characters, I know what my perspective on the world is. And so it's easy now to do a show as myself and feel confident that it'll be funny and that it'll you know, go well and whatever. But I think before I was just more nervous about that.
So that sound means it's time for our final segment, which is the laughing round. It's like a lightning round, but because this is comedy, it's a laughing round. Do you have a character you wish you could steal, or a character you saw someone else do? And you wish, I wish I had that character and it wasn't theirs. This was a different dimension where everything was the same, but this character was my character.
Oh my God. I mean, there's so many funny characters that people do on Comedy Bang Bang that I love. You know, I guess if I had to say one, I would say John Early's Vicky stand-up. I just love, but like it's just so him. You could never.
Yeah.
But I just love that character.
Do you have a comedy crush? A person whose comedy you have a crush on?
Oh my God, I have so many. Oh God, who? Gabriel Gundacker, Megan Stalter, John Gabris. Oh God, there's so many people. I truly could go on and on. I know I'm not going on and on, but I could because there's so many. But those are just coming to mind right off the top of my head. Those are people. Oh, Zach Galifianakis.
Mm-hmm.
He kills me. You know who's so funny, who I just started, I just discovered online? Chris Fleming, who is hysterical. Do you know him?
Yes.
Oh my God. I had never seen his stuff until during quarantine. I started seeing his videos online and he's fucking hilarious.
Side note, as long as I've been asking that question, I think Megan Stalter has come up like 95% of the time.
That's so funny.
Speaking of Zach Galifianakis, you last year said one of my favorite jokes I've ever seen in a movie, which is you ask what a clam strip is and the waiter goes, have you ever seen a chicken strip? And you say, I've never seen a chicken wear clothes. In the Between Two Ferns movie, can you tell me anything about saying that joke that day? I think it's one of the funniest things I've ever heard.
Oh, thanks. Well, I did an interview with Scott where we, I can't remember what it was for, but we talked about that joke and I thought that I improvised it and he told me I did not and that he wrote it. So I will give him that credit right now because I didn't remember that. And so in the moment, I when I think back, I was like, oh, I think I improvised that but I think what it was now when we talked about it more was that he and maybe Paul Rust or somebody came up with it. I can't remember, but that then they gave it to me. And then I was just like so excited to say it and not laugh. And that was a very fun moment.
This will be the last one. Do you have a character or a bit that you tried or maybe you've tried multiple times that has never worked, but and you keep on trying, but you'll go to your grave like, that was funny and everyone was wrong?
For sure. But which one? I feel like there have been, I typically don't try again, I think, if it's a total flop the first time. I might then just to like do it to mess around, but like typically no. But I have done some where I think, I don't know if I can recreate the magic of that. Like I did one on the Comedy Bang Bang tour that was like the world's oldest child actor or something. I can't remember, but it was like a really fun thing. Like it was I was an old man who was, I can't even remember, but the thing is like sometimes like it's just the improv is really fun, but then it's not like a lasting thing. Like, oh, I don't think I could take enough from that, or it got too weird too fast and it won't work again. So there's no point in trying, but yeah.
That's great. Thank you so much for joining me. That was so great.
Thanks for having me.
That's it for another episode of Good One. You can watch the characters in The Wrong Missy on Netflix. Listen to Threedom and The Newcomers wherever you listen to podcasts. Listen to old episodes of With Special Guest Lauren Lapkus and the Comedy Bang Bang Tour shows on Stitcher Premium. Follow Lauren on social media at Lauren Lapkus. Good One is produced by myself, Jelani Carter, Hannah Rosen, and Camila Salazar. Gautam Srikishan did our theme song. Write a review and rate the show on Apple Podcasts. 5 stars, please. Email any comments, questions, or laughing round suggestions to goodonepodcast@gmail.com or tweet at us at goodonepodcast. I'm Jesse David Fox, and you can follow me at Jesse David Fox. Good One is a production of Vulture and the Vox Media Podcast Network. We'll be back next week with Bert Kreischer. Have a good one. Vote!
Support for this show comes from Art Beats and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Colt Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art Beats and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual past while also revealing their distinct roles within Art Beats and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art Beats and Lyrics now on Hulu. Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
Why do you run? Why does anyone?
I always thought that runners loved running, and that's not the case. Most runners hate running, but they choose to do it.
In the new docuseries, Running Sucks, brought to you by Team Milk, Abby Ayers learns why women runners everywhere are driven to go the distance.
It really is about taking my power back and proving myself wrong.
Team Milk is about fueling women's performance and helping them along their marathon journeys. You can sign up now for the inaugural Every Woman's Marathon taking place in Savannah, Georgia on November 16th, 2024. Learn more and register at everywomansmarathon.com.